Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Friday, June 17th is Star Wars Fireworks Night at T-Mobile Park, the first of seven fireworks shows this year. Tickets are on sale now at mariners.com/fireworks. All right. Right now, as I said, as I promised to the people, that we have Dave Wyman on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, and we couldn't be more thrilled. Dave, how you doing?
Why are you so excited, Jake?
Because I love you, man. I love getting the chance to talk to you. Even though you're a linebacker and you annoy the heck out of me, I still love to get your perspective.
Dave, I'm kind of indifferent in talking to you.
Well, I'll tell you what, I love both of you, okay? There. See, Rob.
Just don't let anybody know.
It's good to be on with you guys. How are you guys doing?
Hey, we're doing, great.
Well,
we're doing great. And especially, look, we've got some, I always love to have some quarterback conversation, Dave. I mean, it might be a big shock to you, but look, there's been a lot of conversation just recently of Jimmy Garoppolo, and I know you and Bob talked about it yesterday in regards to Lewis Riddick's comments about, you know, the fit that Jimmy G could be here in Seattle. What do you make of that? Or do you feel like you've been talking about Geno Smith and Drew Lock so much that you're dying to see how that plays out? Or are you sitting here going, hey, if it's available, if he's cut and he's available on the free agent market, bring it on?
Well, I guess I'm kind of embarrassed that we didn't, like, think of this before, because it just kind of popped up out of the blue. And I don't know, maybe there's, you know, a little bit more of an indication that Jimmy G, you know, is going to be cut by the Niners or whatever, become available anyway. And so, yeah, I just, you know, I think it's kind of funny that people are kind of reacting to it. You know, I wasn't as excited about it as Lewis Riddick was. You know, he was like, wow, they've got to jump all over this. But I like Jimmy G. I'm sorry. And I know a lot of it has to do with you know, his personality. And I think that, but I think that really matters. It really matters of, you know, what kind of guy. Also, he just seemed to kind of fit a time when the Seahawks are looking for somebody. Here's what I would say. And, you know, I didn't get into this yesterday, but what I would say is what the best thing would be for the Seahawks is that Drew Lock becomes the guy. Drew Lock needs to become the guy, I think. And you know, because Jimmy G, if he did come here, yeah, I think it would be a good fit and everything. But that's if it doesn't work out for, you know, for Drew Lock, because I think that needs to happen. I think that needs to happen for the Seahawks. Otherwise, they're going to have to go on a search for a couple of years. And it'd be the same thing if they signed Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo is not going to be one of those franchise quarterbacks like Russell Wilson. He's just a good quarterback. You know, he's a good and a kind of a placeholder for now. But, I don't know what's not to like Jimmy G. And any comparison to Jared Goff to me is, I don't know, I think it's ridiculous. I mean, it's not that far off. But still, if you look at the numbers, you know, Jimmy G, he knows how to work in a system. And that's what, you know, I think that Shane Waldron's going to have going.
Dave, do you think these conversations around Jimmy G and Baker Mayfield are growing in volume based off of what we saw from Drew Lock and Geno Smith in minicamp? Or are these just kind of sprouting off independently of what Geno and Drew did?
Well, yeah, I just think that they're still on the hunt. I don't think it has much to do with what they did during camp. But, you know, you never know. I mean, if you go inside, and Jake would know this better than anybody, the quarterback coach is in there going, okay, I'm not really seeing what I needed to see, and, you know, maybe we need to. But, you know, this is all, by the way, just conversation in the media. That's just us coming up with topics. It has, you know, not necessarily anything to do with the Seahawks coaching staff.
You know, Dave, one of the things that Lewis Riddick said that really caught my attention is, you know, you have somebody from the outside who knows this game very well and pays attention to it very closely and was just interviewing for a GM job saying, look, the Seahawks, they're a sleeping giant. Now, I wonder where you sit on that. I take sleeping giant as they are just literally a piece away. But I think what he was speaking to was more of, you know, the possibility of what this roster can be with the young guys. How did you, you know, what do you make of those comments?
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, I think it sure would help. I mean, if you look, I know you lost Russ. That's a huge deal. I don't really think that the loss of Bobby Wagner is that big of a deal, just because of, you know, he was in the twilight of his career. And so, yeah, I mean, every other place, yeah, there's a couple of things to like. You know, you like the draft, you like, you know, some of the free agent moves that they made. I don't know about a sleeping giant, but I think that they're going to be a lot better than people think. You know, I think that they can make a run at the end. But, you know, the whole thing depends so much on a lot of different factors. Trey Brown, in my opinion, that if he's healthy, I think that is going to be very important. You know, Rashad Penny or Ken Walker, because I don't think Chris Carson's going to be playing. I mean, there's a lot of different, you know, these young tackles. There's a lot of things that have to happen for the Seahawks to, you know, to make a run at the playoffs and be the sleeping giant. So, yeah, I'm not so sure if I agree with him on that. I'm not trying to be overly pessimistic. I just think that this is one of those times where a lot of times you go into a season and you go, well, this guy has to work out and that guy has to work out. This is one of those where it's like, you know, you got a couple corners, you got a couple of offensive tackles, you got a quarterback, you got a running back. I mean, there's just a lot of things, a lot of question marks that, you know, that I believe Pete and John will develop those guys and it'll happen. I just don't know how soon.
Well, and that's how I see it too, Dave, is that you're not pessimistic about the team. It's just the reality of the position that they're in right now. It's so hard to transition to a new era and then immediately just go, you know, and not skip a beat, especially with so many young players and so many rookies that you're going to be playing. That doesn't mean that there isn't going to be a ton of progress that is made potentially, hopefully, throughout the season. And then also in regards to what they can eventually be and continue to build. So, you know, Dave, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I think a lot of people hear those things and they immediately think, oh, you're being negative and things that that nature. It's like, no, this is going to take some time. It will for even, you know, Charles Cross, and who's been penned in as a left tackle. It's going to take some time for these rookies to step up. But Dave, my next question goes to, all right, well, they want the satisfaction. They want to see things pop right away. Who do you expect out of the rookie class to fulfill on that promise, that when they see these guys early that they're like, oh, yep, this guy's going to be fun to watch?
Yeah, you know, a couple of guys. I think Tyreek Smith is kind of a long shot, but I really like that kid, the kid out of Ohio State. And, you know, just a great personality, but he's got some really good moves. I feel like that guy could kind of be a guy that flashes. But the two guys that really stand out, I feel like Charles Cross is kind of a given. I mean, he's going to start at left tackle, and if he struggles, they're going to leave him in there. But the guys that I think, Kobe Bryant, that kid looks like he is NFL game ready to me, as far as practice and what his career that he had at Cincinnati. Really like him, and I really like Ken Walker. I think at the end of the season, he might end up having the biggest effect. Because, you know, look, and this is nothing against Rashad Penny, but Rashad Penny had a hamstring issue recently, and that just kind of brings up bad memories, I think, for everybody. I hope that it's not a big deal and that he's able to overcome those kinds of things, but that's just kind of how it's gone for him, you know. And Chris Carson, you know, as far as the neck thing goes, I'm worried about that. So I think my two favorite probably are Kobe Bryant and Ken Walker, as far as that they can right away, you know, make a huge impact. And the reason why I don't say Charles Cross is because, you know, if you're playing good offensive tackle, typically people, you know, nobody knows. Not after, you know, it'll take a few games where, oh, he hasn't given up a sack. Okay, that's good. But, you know, I mean, offensive tackle, it's not going to, like, stand out. But if he's a good, solid player, he's one of those guys that you'll talk about after, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of, you know, shutting down every rusher he faces.
Don't tell that to our friend Big Ray Roberts, Dave.
He'd be
beside himself here.
Ray knows, you know, that the offensive linemen always the tightest group, and I always say they're bonded by misery. And the reason why is because nobody ever notices them unless they make a mistake. So, yeah, it's tough for those big fellas, man. It's tough.
Dave, Jake and I had a conversation on our show yesterday asking which Seahawks should we expect to emerge as impact players in 2022. Jake, I believe, said Shelby Harris. I said Uchenna Nwosu. Who do you think will emerge from a group of guys that may not get the press that will have a huge impact on this upcoming season?
Does Cody Barton count?
Well, we kind of figured that was who you were going to go with. I mean, maybe non-Cody Barton division, or you can go with Cody Barton.
No, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting watching the linebackers. I'm also really excited to see Owusu as well. So that'll be interesting to see how that fits. I think for a lot of people that think they're going to see a much different defense, I don't think it's going to be that much difference. You know, some of the stuff with the 4-3 with 3-4 principles or whatever is kind of you rush 4, you drop, you know, 7. That's pretty much how it's going to go. But, I think the linebackers are going to be a lot better. And I think probably the guy that doesn't get mentioned enough is Jordan Brooks. Jordan Brooks is, you know, I talk about Cody Barton a lot, but Jordan Brooks is the best linebacker. He is real. I mean, he has a chance to be one of those guys that sort of replaces, you know, kind of like a Bobby Wagner. And, you know, I feel like he has that kind of ability, and he's played really well. He's really physical, very smart player, great in coverage. So, you know, I don't know if he's a front runner, but I think he's somebody that doesn't get talked about enough.
You know, you're absolutely right, and he has a chance to really emerge as one of the, you know, top young linebackers in the league this year, and I'm excited to watch it. Dave, one of the things that I am concerned about that I wanted to ask you is, what is your concern level that you're transitioning to a new defense? And it's nobody's fault, but you have Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, and Trey Brown that are out nursing injuries right now, and they're not practicing. They're not out there, and I know that there's mental learning that you can do, but so much of defensive play, Dave, is chemistry and communication, being out there on the field. Are you worried about that aspect of it, that they're not getting that valuable time together?
Yeah, I guess not with Quandre and Jamal, especially not Quandre. You know, I feel like that guy, he knows defense so well, and he can be in a room and, you know, take mental reps. And that's part of being a pro is, you know, coming into the NFL, I needed the reps, and I just didn't get them. You know, once the season started, you know, I'd get maybe 2 reps with the starting defense, and then I was playing scout team my rookie year, and it was just, I just couldn't get the defense down because I didn't have the experience. But I get into my 3rd, 4th, 5th year, you can pretty much go through practice mentally and do it right. So pretty early on, but I do worry about the injuries, you know, and Marquise Blair falls into that. That's a guy really, and that's one of those things that can really screw you. Look at the Mariners right now. I mean, you know, if they had Haniger and, you know, all the Giles and all the guys that you know, they were sort of counting on, that can end up sinking your season. So that does kind of worry me a little bit. Because you also throw in, we don't know about Rashad Penny, Chris Carson. I mean, there's a lot of things. And that's one of the most disappointing things. Because Marquise Blair, I was talking about this yesterday. When I went down there his rookie year, there was 2 guys that stood out. It was Jamal Adams and Marquise Blair. Those 2 guys played the best that I saw. They had the best camps. And Marquise Blair hasn't been able to stay healthy. So it's just a shame. That part of it is really always tough. But I don't worry about the veteran guys. I do worry about the young guys when it comes to missing practice and things like that, Jake. You know, missing the reps. It's really important when you're young.
Well, we have been listening to Dave Wyman on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Dave, thank you so much for taking the time and hopping on with us.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, guys. Good talking to you.
All right. You can listen to him later on today, starting at 2 p.m. Great to have him back from vacation. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to 4 Down Territory.
This is 4 Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
Before we get to first down, I think the Mariners waited to announce tomorrow's the network that tomorrow's game is on after we hung up with Dave.
Oh, really?
because it's a YouTube game tomorrow between the Twins and Mariners.
Oh, no.
It's a day game only on YouTube.
We will see if Wyman and Bob can pull this off. You can do it, guys. You got this. You can do it.
He's going to call us back and get down the throats of Major League Baseball. How could you do this to me? First down to you, Jake. What would Jimmy Garoppolo bring to the Seahawks over Baker Mayfield?
One word, stability. Jimmy Garoppolo would bring stability to the Seahawks over Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield in his career has been incredibly volatile and more so off the field than on the field. What we've seen from Baker Mayfield, I believe, is last year in particular, a year that did him injustice with trying to play through an injury, and it and just snowballed and did not go well for him. Up to that point, you really saw over the last year and a half where Baker Mayfield was really starting to turn a corner in his career. But the volatility of him off the field as a leader, that is what you don't necessarily want to walk into, because it runs the risk. It can either work out very well. It could be a boom or bust situation. With Jimmy Garoppolo, there is stability. You know exactly who you're going to get. You know exactly the kind of guy you're going to get day in and day out, the type of leadership that he is going to bring and provide, the type of play that he is going to provide. And Curtis, could Jimmy Garoppolo be the 2019 version of himself, his best year as a pro? Maybe, but you certainly know the floor of Jimmy Garoppolo. And to me, that is what stability the Seattle Seahawks need for this year and possibly the year after that as they transition and try to find their long-term answer at the quarterback position. But stability is the number one thing that I think Jimmy Garoppolo would bring to the Seahawks over Baker Mayfield in a very, very positive way.
Second down. Jake, one of the common themes to come from training, or from minicamp, I should say, is this talk about energy, this talk about how fast the Seahawks have been and how fast they've looked. Why does everyone involved with the Seahawks keep talking about that energy that's going on in the BMAC right now?
One, because it's palpable. Two, because it's a staple of the Seattle Seahawks and Pete Carroll and his program, the energy and the buzz and the excitement. But Uchenna Nwosu brought up one thing that I think is really important as they made this transition away from Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, and really as a roster construction philosophy, getting away from the older veteran players and being filled with more veteran players and getting back to their roots of young, hungry guys. Uchenna Nwosu brought up why that's so important.
You know, being around a lot of young guys is that they're hungry. You know, they're ready to compete. They're ready to shine. You know, they're fast. You know, they're physical. They're looking for a way to get on the field. And when you're around guys like that, it just brings out the best in everybody. So things are going to be really well.
Okay, so Uchenna Nwosu is saying, look, being around a bunch of young guys who are hungry, who are trying to make rosters, who, you know, bring that energy every single day to practice, you know what it does to a veteran? Or a guy who's kind of like in the middle. I mean, Uchenna Nwosu is still really young. He's going to be 26 years old. He's just getting going. But for somebody like that who's been in the league for a few years, it keeps you young. It keeps you motivated. It keeps you hungry. And I think that environment was tailor-made. What Pete Carroll brings to the table is tailor-made for young guys. And so I think that is the reason why that everyone's talking about the energy and the excitement and the buzz and new opportunities, because that is a staple and a hallmark of this program. And when you can really truly create that always compete mentality and really truly create that opportunity where guys feel like they have to compete for every single job, there is a level of excitement in that and a level of opportunity to make something your own. And that's why I think that, you know, it is great to hear that, because we have not heard that type of conversation in quite some time.
Third down. Jake, should the Seahawks be fine going into the season with Geno Smith or Drew Lock as their starting quarterback?
Well, Mike Salk actually asked this question to Lewis Riddick, and here was his answer, cut number four.
I broke into the NFL in scouting with John Schneider in Washington in 2001. So I've known him a long time. I have not talked to him about this. I respect the hell out of Pete, and I've talked to Pete numerous times too. Jamal Adams, a good friend of mine. I haven't talked to anybody. So this is me kind of looking at this going, when we sit here and we try and figure out what's going to happen with these quarterbacks, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you kick the tires on that kind of thing? I know people say, well, Pete says he's fine with Drew Lock. He says he's fine with Geno. Come on. No, you're not.
Interesting.
That's some pretty strong words from Lewis Riddick. And to be honest with you, I 100% agree with him. You can be on the outside, as Pete Carroll and John Schneider are, and project this level of confidence and excitement about Geno Smith and Drew Lock, but they know that this is not an ideal situation at all. And if they have to roll with Geno Smith and Drew Lock, they're going to make the best of it, and they're going to try to do everything that they can to help those guys succeed and play at their best. However, it would be really nice to be able to upgrade the position with somebody like Baker Mayfield or Jimmy Garoppolo, guys who have been there, done that, who have been able to get to playoff games, who have been able to be franchise starters. I think that that is incredibly important, and it would be a great, great addition for their team over two guys who have a ton of question marks about them. You know, Drew Lock, you know, can he be a successful quarterback in this league? And Geno Smith, is he anything more than just a really solid backup quarterback in this league? I have to believe that the Seattle Seahawks, when they talk about always competing, you cannot look at the quarterback position and say, nope, we're good, we're fine. There always is an opportunity to upgrade and improve. And if you get that opportunity through Baker Mayfield or Jimmy Garoppolo, I have to imagine that they're going to take it. The difference being, Curtis, is that they're not going to be desperate to do it via trade. They don't want to give up capital. They don't want to give up future opportunities to improve their team. But if those guys are cut, then you have an opportunity to sign them at a price point that is much more friendlier to the team than their current cap hit. And that's where I think the Seahawks would show off their always compete mentality.
Fourth down. Jake, I want to know, what's a sport you haven't played that you'd like to pick up? This is inspired by a story in the timeline.
Oh, a sport that I haven't played that I would like to pick up.
You and Brooke head out to the tennis courts.
You know, tennis
racquetball.
Look, tennis court. Playing tennis would be a sport that would be really fun to pick up. I think that's a good one right there. But it is a lot of running.
Oh yeah.
Like I've messed around with a racket before, and just, you know, like played somebody randomly. I don't know how they do it. Like I just. But if you could play tennis, you got to be in pretty decent shape.
Yeah, I think so. Mike Lefko was hoping you'd probably say pickleball.
Well, pickleball, I have played a lot. I have played a lot, and I do really, really enjoy it. Pickleball,
Mike wants to be your doubles partner.
I think Mike probably wants to do better than me.
Oh.
But I, you know, because Mike is in, like, Mike Lefko is very seriously competitive. Like, he's entering tournaments and doing all that stuff. I'm not at that level yet. Like, I'm like, if we go and play in the backyard, I can win and I can beat you.
Yeah.
But I'm not at that level.
Mike, a few months ago, came up to me because he knows that I live down south, and he heard of a pickleball court that was near where I live.
Yeah.
And he was like, what do you know about this? And I was like, dude, I don't play pickleball. Like,
he was asking you for the intel?
Yeah, it's like,
oh my gosh.
I mean, I know where that park is. I walk that park a lot with my wife and baby girl, but like, I couldn't tell you what the sight lines are on this court or anything.
What do you mean? What do you mean you don't know? How do you live your life and not know this?
Sorry, I wish I knew, but I wish I could give this information back to you.
You've got to do better. You got to do better.
I know. I'm sorry.
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, we've got the timeline, and we've got a Super Bowl champion Seahawk who is picking up a new sport. We've got that for you next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Welcome into The Timeline. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. We are going to dive into all of the stories that you're probably seeing in your timeline. First story of The Timeline. Golden Tate has joined the Port Angeles Lefties of the West Coast League, summer collegiate baseball league. Now, Golden Tate played baseball for Notre Dame and hit 329 during the 2009 season. He was drafted in the 42nd round by the Diamondbacks in 2007 and the 50th round by the Giants in 2010. Curtis, what do you make of this story?
I mean, he's got a history of playing baseball. He had a successful career with Notre Dame playing baseball. I think he was an outfielder for them. I think he played center field.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like this is a guy just picking up a bat and being like, you know what, I'd like to try this. I'd like to see what I can do. And as we know, we've seen plenty of athletes just simply fail at throwing a first pitch. And like baseball is very difficult to play, even at the collegiate level, even at the summer league level, where Golden Tate is playing. So, look, I think more power to him. I think this is going to be an incredible thing for the Port Angeles Lefties organization and for that league.
Yeah.
And, look, I think fans of that league, where they're going to these small towns here in the Northwest and you get to see an ex-Super Bowl champion, like, that's pretty cool.
That's so cool. That's super cool. And it makes you wonder, like, how this got started. Like, who did Golden Tate know that got him involved with Port Angeles? Like, I mean, just this it's crazy.
I wonder if he has maybe an ownership stake in the team or something like that. Now, whenever you see a football player try to make it as a baseball player, we've seen various levels of success. Obviously, I think Bo Jackson is the top of the pile.
Oh, yes.
Deion Sanders as
absolutely.
Well. Near the bottom of the pile, I'd say Tim Tebow, who did not make it past, I believe, AA with the New York Mets. And I hate to pile on this guy who has had a successful NFL career with the Carolina Panthers and was a really good player for the UW Huskies a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
Shaq Thompson may have had the worst minor league baseball career, full stop, of any baseball player of all time.
Really?
I'm going to read you his stats here.
Oh, no.
In 39 at-bats with the Gulf Coast League Boston Red Sox at the age of 18 years old in 2012, in 39 at-bats with that team, Shaq Thompson struck out 37 times.
Oh, no. That is a stark reality.
He did not get a hit in 39 at-bats. He did have 8 walks during his time with the Gulf Coast League Red Sox.
Yeah.
39 at-bats, 37 strikeouts.
Wow.
Poor Shaq Thompson. He picked the right sport.
He did pick the right sport. And, you know, when you know that you're not going to go pro or that you're not going to, you know, live up to the expectations, we all have that moment. Like, for me, definitively, I remember being in the seventh grade, we were at a baseball tournament, and it was the first time that I had seen a kid live and in person being able to, like, touch, I think it was like 75 is what it was. It was like 75, I'm in the seventh grade. I mean, that is heat at that age. And step into the batter's box, and you hear the ball hiss as it's coming in, and you're like, yo, this is not for me. Like, I am not tracking this. This is not going well. And I probably know that baseball is not going to be my sport, okay? So, like, you know, we all have that moment. And for Shaq Thompson, unfortunately, that was his moment and moved on to football. So, you know, rightfully so. And for Golden Tate, this is going to be awesome. I mean, he's not trying to go pro. He's not trying to, you know, necessarily, you know, get back into the minor leagues or the MLB or anything like that. This is just an awesome opportunity to continue to be active in sports, play a sport that he loves and is connected to, and to be in the Northwest. I mean, that's pretty dang cool,
man. Some of the teams in the West Coast League, some of us have probably heard of them. You've got the Wenatchee Apple Sox, Brent Stecker's favorite team
of all time, even more so than
the Mariners. He is a Wenatchee Apple Sox diehard. You've got the Portland Pickles, who are notorious for having viral moments on social media based off of their, you know, marketing campaigns. The Bellingham Bells, the Corvallis Knights, the Bend Elks. You've got some teams up in Canada with the Edmonton Riverhawks, the Kamloops North Paws. Fun time is about to be had up in that league with Golden Tate.
You missed the best one.
What's that one, Brady?
The Walla Walla Suites.
All right, there we go. The Walla Walla Suites. Brady, did you play at all in the West Coast League?
I played
collegiately.
I did play collegiately. I never played in the West Coast League, but I had plenty of friends that did.
All right.
Okay, so what's the difference between playing collegiately versus playing in the West Coast League? Like,
collegiately, you play against people that are in your own division. Division 1, 2, 3, and the way down. The West Coast League, you can come from any collegiate team and play on the West Coast League. So you could be playing with D1 players as a D3. D2 is what I was. You could be playing with D1 players, which many of my friends did.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Well, I mean, dude, that's awesome. That's going to be so much fun. I can't wait to hear the Golden Tate tracker and how he's doing in the West Coast League. All right, let's get to the next story. A Mississippi weatherman roasted the Cowboys in his forecast, and guess what? We're here for it. Cut number 9.
And now we look at our 10-day forecast. It's looking a little bit like those Dallas Cowboys is peaking in the 90s.
Oh, oh my gosh. It's so funny because it's so random.
Low-hanging fruit when you think about it. Like, yeah. That's a perfect weatherman joke.
But this is a guy in Mississippi. Like,
he's probably like a Saints fan or something like that.
Oh, man.
I don't know what team they root for in Mississippi. Maybe the Falcons or whatever. The Cowboys are right there, just a couple states over in Texas.
Like, oh, gosh.
Any chance you can get to dig at Cowboys or the Cowboys fans, like, you got to take it. And I say this as somebody whose stepfather-in-law is a Cowboys fan.
Yeah.
But he is one of those Cowboys fans that just has this eternal feeling of doom and gloom.
See,
around
that is more that's that that he's is not one more of those palpable.
Yeah, he's not one of those Cowboys fans that just parades around as though they are God's gift to the game of football. He's
right.
The one that's like, yeah, here we go. Here's another loss. Like every we normally go to their house for Thanksgiving, and Cowboys play on Thanksgiving, and he can't even stand to watch it because he's like. Like, we're going to lose. Like, this is just how it always goes.
See, I can deal with the Cowboys fan like that. To me, I've got no problem. But as you said, if Cowboys fans, you're out there parading around like you're America's team, you're not, okay? You're not America's team anymore, and you did peak in the 90s. The weatherman had that correct. All right, we got another story in the timeline that we're not going to be able to get to, but we'll save it for NFL headlines because it is a juicy story. We've got Hall of Fame beef, people. That will be coming up on the that'll be coming up at NFL headlines at 12:30. It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next, Albert Breer talked extensively with Mike Salk about DK Metcalf's contract situation. He had some interesting things to say. We're going to dive into that next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Some more DMX. Yes. All right. Brady coming in hot. All right. We talked about Albert Breer said some things on the Mike Salk show about DK Metcalf. And really, you know, kind of where the conversation took a turn that really piqued my interest was him talking about DK Metcalf. Now, they talked about Drew Locke. They talked about Jimmy Garoppolo. But, you know, I think that when you're talking about DK Metcalf and currently where the Seahawks and him are at with their contract negotiations, knowing that they are right now not on the same page, I think it's important to know what the current receiver landscape is like and also really, really telling yourself and recommitting to yourself as a fan base that, yes, we want to pay DK Metcalf. Yes, we want to pay DK Metcalf. Or no, you do not, because that deal is going to be coming and it is going to be substantial, substantial. Here, cut number 10, Albert Breer talked about, look, the DK Metcalf deal is going to be a lot more expensive now than it was just at the beginning of this offseason.
It's going to cost a lot more than it would have 4 or 5 months ago, that's for sure. I mean, if you look at like what's happened at receiver, this is an amazing number. There were four guys, I believe, league-wide that were making $20 million or more per year at that position going into the offseason. That number's now 11, and it's 8 guys because Julio Jones came off the list. So one's come off the list, but 8 guys have gotten deals at that number or above. And so, you know, right now, if you're DK Metcalf or you're Terry McLaurin or you're Deebo Samuel, this isn't like being outlandish asking for $23, $24, $25 million a year. It's just where the market is right now.
So where the market is right now has risen exponentially. This is why I have always had the problem with the way the Seahawks do business with their superstar players. It's not that it's fundamentally wrong. It's not that you don't understand it. I mean, it's an ideal world, right? Ideally, Curtis, you would like to be able to break it up and have it laid out perfectly. All right, we worry about only our players from this time. Then we get to worry about free agents. Then we worry about the draft. Then we worry about the third free wave of free agency. And oh, by the way, just before the start of the season, if there's any superstars left over that we have to sign, we do it at that time. But you always leave yourself, if you're waiting to the last second, if you're waiting till the summer to get these deals done, then you're always going to be the one that has to give out the biggest check.
Yes, because always. All these other deals will have taken place. You find that the player that you are trying to extend will now not sign for the number that you had originally in mind. They've seen all these guys get their money, and it's like, well, I want that. I want exactly what so-and-so has because I'm more talented than them. I'm more productive than them, so I deserve a bigger contract than them. And, you know, with the Seahawks, there have been a few of these contracts that have worked in their favor where they negotiate into the summer and into the first couple weeks of training camp, but a few of them have not worked out in the Seahawks' favor. I don't think Bobby Wagner's extension worked out the way that they had hoped to because I think they got caught paying for past performance at $18 million per season.
Yes, they did.
While Bobby was still productive at the end of his Seahawks career, he was not the linebacker that he was at his very peak.
But that's the perfect example, though, is that they paid more than they wanted to. The market, when they were originally set to pay Bobby Wagner, and I can't remember the exact numbers at the time.
$15 million.
So you're thinking, all right.
And then CJ Mosley signed and ruined everything.
Yes. He goes and signs a ridiculous contract with the New York Jets.
And I think,
much like Christian Kirk did with the Jags.
Didn't Mosley only end up playing like three games with the Jets?
Yes. Yeah. He took them for all their money and did nothing in return. But CJ Mosley goes and resets the market dramatically to $17 million per year. You're caught having to pay Bobby Wagner $18 million. Because it happened at the end of the year. What I wish, and again, in an ideal world, then the Seahawks aren't going to change for anybody, but I wish that they would take the Tyler Lockett model. They've shown the willingness to do it, and I'm not sure why they elect to do it with guys like Jamal Adams or DK Metcalf, Russell Wilson in the past, Bobby Wagner, because the number just keeps rising and rising and rising. If the Seattle Seahawks, Curtis, went to DK Metcalf at the end of the year this year and said, look, we are going to pay you. We are going to give you $20 million per year or $21 million per year. Heck, even $22 million per year at the end of the season.
Probably would have.
He would have signed that deal.
Would have enticed him, yes.
He would have signed that deal. Wow, okay, this organization really wants me. They want to pay me that money. And then everyone sits here and goes, wow, that is a massive deal. I don't know. And then you watch this offseason play out and you're like, actually, I feel kind of good about that deal. Like, actually,
well, and that's the thing.
It's a pretty good deal. That's the same thing that happened with Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to point out, is that they signed Tyler Lockett to a pair of deals that at the time was like, oh, man, you're paying him that much. But then it turned out to be, you know, a lot less than what a wide receiver of his caliber ended up going for. And it paid out handsomely for the Seahawks in terms of on-field production, you know, for what they were paying him. You could have done that with DK Metcalf. Or, well, obviously you couldn't do that in season because he was still in his third year in the NFL, and you're not able to renegotiate until the completion of your third year. But there were still plenty of opportunities early on in the offseason to get a deal done, and now you find yourself with DK not reporting to minicamp. We still have no idea if he's going to report for training camp in a few weeks, and I have a hard time thinking he's going to stay away from training camp just because of how big of a message that would send. I think if he stays away from training camp,
yeah,
then any possibility is on the table.
Red flag.
Yeah.
Huge red flag. And that to me would be, oh man, that would concern me greatly. I don't believe it's going to get to that point. If anything, DK Metcalf will show up for training camp and just will not practice. I would be shocked if he doesn't show up, because then you're talking about some real serious drama and you know, possibility of, you know, maybe having to trade DK Metcalf after the season, which you don't want. You want to be able to have DK Metcalf here as a critical piece for this team for, you know, future years to come. They don't have any major contracts on the books. They can absolutely fit this in and make this work. And I believe that they're committed to doing so. But that to me is what stands out when I listen to Albert Breer. It is the fact that, look, when it comes to these contracts, sometimes waiting isn't always the best policy. And DK Metcalf, you could have had him wrapped up if willing. If you came out aggressively with that kind of offer at the end of the year, you could have been coming out smelling like a rose when it's all said and done, because the market has just exploded. And Tyson in Gig Harbor said, you know, look, when is this strategy worked out? Paying less because of the market crashed. And he brought up the running backs a few years ago. The only time that I can think of when this actually worked out in their favor, you could say Carlos Dunlap last year, right? He thought he was going to get a bigger payday, and the market told him no.
And he came back.
But he was also an older, aging veteran player.
Yes.
And then the other one is Chris Carson. Chris Carson worked out favorably to them where they didn't have to pay a whole lot. The difference was, this is not like this was a huge, robust running back free agent market, whereas DK Metcalf this offseason, as you're planning ahead and seeing the rest of the NFL, you know, as it's playing out, you know that AJ Brown's up for a payday. You know Debo Samuel's up for a payday. Terry McLaurin is up for a payday. Now, you can't foresee Davante Adams and Tyreek Hill getting traded. I mean, those are crazy deals, but unfortunately, this one did not work out for them, to the point where now they're having to pay a substantial bit of they're having to pay substantially more money than what they were anticipating when they initially had this planned. We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners take on the Minnesota Twins in game two of their series tonight at T-Mobile Park. Pre-game starts at 6 p.m. First pitch will be at 7:10 on Seattle Sports Station, and that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Shane Company. All right, coming up next, we've got Rob Staton of Seahawks draft blog coming up next. You're not going to want to miss it.